The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the Life Sciences Awards headline, Journey of a Lifetime. Architect John Atkins III recalls a professional career filled with ups and downs, but cloaked in purpose and mission. And the articles begin on the inside of the Triangle Business Journal. We'll read the Lifetime Achievement Award winner. The headline, John Atkins III, Chairman and CEO, O'Brien Atkins Associates, PA. And this is written by Erica Wells. Being part of a bigger solution by advancing life sciences in the Triangle has inspired the leader of an architecture and planning firm during his long career. John Atkins III, 77, co-founded O'Brien Atkins in 1975 with Bill O'Brien and Belton Atkinson. But his team began creating award-winning life sciences designs for industry leaders in the 1980s. These companies are doing things to help people with health challenges and help shape the future of what medical treatment will be, says Atkins, who now serves as chairman and CEO. I'm not a scientist, but I do enjoy helping these companies, from the architectural engineering standpoint, achieve success and accomplish what they're doing to make for a better world for all of us. Now Atkins has been recognized for his role in building life sciences in the region as this year's winner of the Triangle Business Journal's Life Sciences Lifetime Achievement Award. Atkins says making strides in life sciences has been a collaborative effort between individuals, corporations, and state and local governments. It is heartwarming to be a part of that recognition, but it's that great team from the various sectors that is important for success in a region, Atkinson says. His firm has done more than 125 projects for more than 30 clients, and its design space covers 6.2 million square feet and 1,110 master planned acres. The firm has been involved in major life sciences design projects for companies including Greenlight Bio and Indigo Ag and Research Triangle Park. Also, the firm designed Eli Lilly Research and Development Facility in Research Triangle Park. Over 35 years ago, the firm made a conscious decision to put its resources into preparing for the influx in life sciences, Atkins says. We got in early and built relationships with these companies, he says. That's a very important cultural aspect of the firm. Many of those companies have become long-term clients, including Biogen, which he helped bring to RTP more than 25 years ago. The firm is currently designing Biogen's new patient call center. In response to the pandemic, Atkins and his team worked with Corning Life Sciences on a facility that will make glass vials for vaccines and other medicines. His firm also has produced designs for nationally known names, including Cisco, NetApp, and GSK that help RTP evolve. I've seen a lot of change, Atkins says. Most of it was Research Triangle Park-centric and in research development, but that is blossoming into manufacturing. Pure Life Sciences has added biotechnology, and more recently, the bioagricultural end of the spectrum has come online. It's been nice to watch what's happening, even during a challenging year from an economic standpoint. Atkins says the future is bright for life sciences in the Triangle because of previous investors, research from top universities, and support from related agencies, including the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. Founder Charles Hamner, considered the father of biotechnology in North Carolina, recognized Atkins' talent 20 years ago when he recruited him to join the organization's board. Atkins has held several leadership positions on the board, including chair, and considers Hamner as his longtime mentor. Atkins' accomplishments extend beyond his life sciences design portfolio. He has served on the boards of agencies that promote economic development and has volunteered for several nonprofits. Also, Atkins has remained involved with professional architecture organizations. Atkins has been awarded for his longtime commitment to his alma mater, NC State University, where he received a bachelor's degree in architecture. He also earned a master's of regional planning from UNC Chapel Hill. The Durham native was intrigued with engineering in high school when he took mechanical drafting classes. The challenge of solving problems, putting things together, and later helping a client reach their aspirations through architecture is what I found to be very fulfilling, and I love working with people, Atkins says. Moving forward, Atkins hopes the workforce is prepared to serve the sector's growing demand. That's our biggest challenge, but we've done a good job because the triangle today is much bigger than it was even 25 years ago, and a lot of that is life sciences driven, he says. And with this article, there's also a 5 questions with section. Complete the following statement. Since I joined the company, I am most proud of O'Brien Atkins' very strong culture of client service. We're committed to meeting our clients' needs in an ever-changing environment. Succinctly, talk about one major professional accomplishment in the past year. Our architectural and engineering design of Corning Life Sciences' Durham high-tech manufacturing facility for the production of Valor Glass vials for vaccines. We're proud to play a small role in Operation Warp Speed's pandemic response. What should the triangle do to nurture an even more vibrant atmosphere for the life sciences community? Continue to train and develop a skilled workforce for both current life sciences companies in the triangle and for future investments. Do you have a mentor? And if so, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received from him or her? Charles E. Hamner, retired director of the NC Biotechnology Center and the father of North Carolina's biotechnology industry, is my life sciences mentor. Dr. Hamner has given much invaluable advice, but one point that stands out is his advocacy of translating the science into jobs. The NC State BTEC and NCCU Bright Training Research Facilities, respectively, are physical outgrowths of that vision. O'Brien Atkins was fortunate enough to have designed both. What's something you learned in the pandemic, and how will that help you and your company going forward? The O'Brien Atkins family has always proven itself to be flexible, adaptable, and responsive in meeting our clients' design objectives, vision, budget, and schedule needs. The pandemic merely changed the platform venue to that of working remote. We were and are able to deliver the same high level of quality and responsiveness, whether communicating virtually or face-to-face, all without missing a beat. Now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, Parklets add a festive flavor. On a side street in the Oakwood neighborhood in Raleigh, some enterprising business owners found a way to expand their space and spark a fun atmosphere, thanks to the city allowing some creativity as the pandemic goes on. Matt Allen, owner of the Pelagic Beer and Wine Bottle Shop on Pace Street, teamed with the Jolie restaurant next door to build a parklet, which is sort of a deck that extends into the street. It's been huge. We had it all winter long, had outdoor heaters, says Allen, noting that revenue went up by about 33% thanks to the outdoor space. Allen, a marine geologist, opened Pelagic in 2015. He'd hoped to open a brewery, but decided he didn't have the capital he needed for that. So we decided to open up a bottle shop, and it evolved into a cool neighborhood spot, he says. The outdoor space helps. The parklet offers 3 parking spaces, and Allen is hopeful he'll keep it after the pandemic. The city is allowing the parklets in the downtown and connected pedestrian areas. According to city documents, the parklets are permitted until 30 days after all COVID restrictions are lifted. Different rules will apply for those wanting a permanent structure. Despite the pandemic, Pelagic has remained profitable, helped by the parklet. During the lockdown period, there were a lot of people drinking loads and loads of beer, Allen says. Get away this summer to Raleigh. With daily new cases of COVID-19 falling, this summer vacation season could be one for the ages. And Raleigh is among the best travel destinations, according to a new report. WalletHub ranked the top U.S. travel destinations based on multiple factors, including bang for the buck and ease of access. The Raleigh Metro comes in at number 20 on the list, behind Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Knoxville, Tennessee. Charlotte, yawn, is number 48 on the list, and Greensboro is number 86. At the top of the list is Orlando, Florida, followed by Honolulu and New Orleans. British firm makes the leap to Raleigh. A British technology firm that trades on the London Stock Exchange is making a jump to the United States and starting in Raleigh. Crimson Tide PLC has named Triangle veteran Mark Self president and CEO of its North American operations, with plans to market a mobile workforce platform called MPro5 that allows companies to manage their teams in the field. With world-class universities, a technology-savvy workforce, and an innovative entrepreneurial business ecosystem, Raleigh is an ideal location for us, says Barry Whipp, the founder of London-based Crimson Tide. Self initially came to the Triangle in 1994 with IBM and notes that the recent announcements by Apple and Google are catching the attention of firms such as Crimson Tide, which does most of its business in the United Kingdom and Ireland. Self plans to hire 4 or 5 people initially. Tax revenue shows economy heating up. Here's a good sign for the economy and local government. Wake County's sales tax revenue for the current fiscal year is way above the budgeted figure. The county's Board of Commissioners recently voted to allocate the $67 million in extra funds to address some critical needs. Here's the breakdown. Putting $22.7 million toward the county's fund balance to ensure it maintains strong reserves. Devoting $12.3 million to the Wake County Public School System's debt service. And utilizing $32 million for one-time projects and initiatives, including $12 million for a future public health center. For the current fiscal year, the county is expecting $229 million in sales tax revenue. For the 2022 fiscal year, the county is currently budgeting for $235 million. Giving back with brews and sweets. A group of downtown Wake Forest businesses that survived the pandemic are joining together to give back. The 8 local bars and restaurants form the 615 Collaboration, that's Collaboration, and are offering a special brew, strawberry and basil ale, or ice cream flavor, for non-drinkers. All proceeds from the sales will go to the Tri-Area Ministry Food Pantry. Beginning May 21, the ale will be on tap and the ice cream will be available at Norse Brewing Company, Bodega Tapas, Over the Falls, and Strike and Barrel, Sugar Magnolia Cafe, Tonic Bar and Social Club, and Unwind on White will only pour the ale. Lumpy's Ice Cream will serve the dessert. The group worked with Norse's brewmaster, Brad Wynn, on the summer concoction, while Lumpy's created the cool treat. IBM's spin-off is Tar Heel Blue. IBM is spinning off its managed infrastructure services business into a new company known as Kyndryl, that's spelled K-Y-N-D-R-Y-L, and it has tapped 2 UNC Chapel Hill graduates for its C-suite, Maria Bartolome Winans, a Triangle-based IBMer, as chief marketing officer, and Michael Bradshaw, chief information officer of NBC Universal, as its CIO. Despite those local connections, Kyndryl will be headquartered in New York City. Asked about Kyndryl's presence in North Carolina, spokeswoman Ann Nispero says there was no additional info. But IBM's Research Triangle Park campus has representation from all IBM business lines, including the unit making up Kyndryl. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Finance page written by Lauren Onasorge. Charging ahead with jobs. Channel Advisor looks to expand its headcount in Triangle. Driven by COVID e-commerce trends, Morrisville-based software firm Channel Advisor is expanding its headcount. The 725-person team will be adding 100 new positions in the next few months, and more than half of those will be in the Triangle, particularly in sales. The expansion is driven by necessity, says Randy Saran, the company's vice president of human resources. As more and more people elect to buy online versus at a brick-and-mortar location, sellers are looking to companies such as Channel Advisor to deliver solutions to help them with their e-commerce businesses. And that has increased demand for sales and service positions, Saran says. She says the firm is looking for standouts and offered advice on how to succeed. Not just at a Channel Advisor job interview, but at any tech employer in the Zoom age. The biggest piece of advice? Be professional. Do your research on the company, she says. Dress professionally and make sure your home environment is conducive to having a call. Saran says it's vital to connect your experience with where you are today. I always like them to talk to me about their background and experience, she says. What I'm looking for, does the candidate talk succinctly about their background and experiences and how they relate to where they are today on their journey? Hiring underway as Fidelity expands in RTP. Hiring has already started for financial giant Fidelity Investments' 500-job expansion in Research Triangle Park. That's according to Rob Mirdes, market leader for the company in North Carolina. The expansion, announced this month for Fidelity's campus in RTP, marks the first time the company has really trekked outside the technology arena when it comes to Triangle hires. It also adds to the company's recently announced plan to hire 225 workers in Durham. Meredith says the new positions do not require college degrees, but they're certainly encouraged. And the plan is to take advantage of the region's university-driven talent, as well as to attract folks with strong customer service skills in industries like retail, hospitality, industries that have been hit by the pandemic, he says. Fidelity has an aggressive training program, one that can help trainees get appropriate licenses in 6 months, Meredith says. But Fidelity isn't the only employer looking to source talent. A number of other big-name firms have announced expansions in recent weeks, from Apple to Google and Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies. Meredith admits the environment is competitive, but says Fidelity's tenure in North Carolina has it feeling good about our level of competition. Entrepreneurship Group gets new CEO. Durham-based entrepreneurial support organization, Council for Entrepreneurial Development, has tapped a new leader, and she comes from within its own walls. The organization has named Kelly Rowell as its new CEO. She has been with CED for 4 years, initially in a customer experience role before taking over the interim CEO spot after the departure of Ravila Gupta, who stepped down last year to become CEO of Bakshi Group. I'm a very customer-centric professional, and I believe that understanding value and transforming that into equitable services and programs for those customers should be a priority of any organization, Rowell says. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Tom McInerney, CEO of Raleigh-based Enact, formerly Genworth Mortgage Insurance. Parent company Genworth Financial announcing the decision to not move forward with its planned $623 million public offering. In light of the recent significant trading volatility in the mortgage insurance sector, Genworth's board of directors determined that current market pricing for the planned offering does not accurately reflect Enact's value. Therefore, we have decided to postpone the IPO and will continue to evaluate our options as market conditions develop. And finally, a big number, 200, the number of Red Hat employees IBM plans to add to its Triangle operations. Tim Kramer, Senior Vice President of Software Engineering at Red Hat, says the investment is a continuation of the bet IBM made on the firm when it purchased it in 2019 for $34 billion. Now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurant section, written by Erica Wells. Nike might just do it locally. Google, then Apple, now is Nike eyeing space in the Triangle? Recent whispers of a big name in apparel becoming a new tenant at one of the most recognizable buildings in Chapel Hill may become reality. Sources tell Triangle Business Journal that Nike might be taking over office space in the iconic Parkline building at 1830 Fordham Boulevard, along US 15 and 501. The $37 billion corporation based outside Portland, Oregon, could share the rhomboid-shaped building with companies including UNC Health, which leased over 50,000 square feet in 2020. It is unclear when the company would move in and how much space it plans to occupy in the building. Nike did not return requests for comment. Sources said it is not clear at what stage of the process the deal currently stands. London-based real estate firm The Instant Group is reportedly brokering the deal. The company, which specializes in finding flexible and shared workspaces, says it places about 8,000 clients each year, from Fortune 500 firms to small to medium-sized business. The Instant Group did not respond to requests for comment. Raleigh-based State Employees Credit Union, which owns the Parkline, did not provide additional details and referred TBJ to the broker. The financial services company finished renovating the building, which was previously the headquarters of Blue Cross NC in 2019. The building is 4 stories tall with about 195,000 square feet total and 146,000 square feet currently available for leasing, according to real estate firm JLL. The property covers over 37 acres in all. The building was vacant for more than 3 years after CQ or SECU bought it for about $35 million in 2015. BSBSNC vacated the building in 2016. The Nike move adds to a list of global companies tapping the triangle so far in 2021. Already, tech giants Apple and Google announced they're entering the triangle, shaking up the job, housing, and office space markets in the process. Wake County hospitality industry slow to rebound from pandemic. Hotels in Wake County started the year with signs of a slow recovery as large group events resumed and COVID-related restrictions eased. First quarter results remained low compared to pre-pandemic levels, but activities such as sporting events played a role in boosting the local hospitality and tourism industries, according to the latest report from the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau, Visit Raleigh. Hotel occupancy in the county was 44.4% for the first quarter, down nearly 25% from the same period a year ago. The first quarter rate is similar to statewide and national averages, and it's just slightly above the county's 44.2% occupancy rate for all of 2020. Countywide, hotel occupancy dropped to 27.5% last April, when the early stages of the coronavirus pandemic brought most business and leisure travel to a halt. The numbers slowly inched up as the year progressed and reopenings became more widespread. For 2020, hotel occupancy in Wake County was down 40.1% over 2019 levels. Hotel lodging taxes in Wake totaled about $3.6 million in the first quarter, down about 31% year-to-date over 2020. The prepared food and beverage tax collection jumped 7.3% year-to-date over 2020, reaching about $7.2 million. Cidery is latest addition in Raleigh. The newest addition to East End Market in Raleigh isn't really trying to convert beer drinkers in the Triangle into cider lovers. Shady Grove Cidery Company co-owner Oliver Koch just wants to change their opinion of it. Most people think of cider as a lesser than beverage, Koch says. For a long time, it was a sugary alcoholic beverage that wasn't really on anyone's radar. After being in the beer industry, I started tasting some ciders that weren't the traditional ones in the grocery store and fell in love. And there's a section called She Said It, with a quote from Angie Hudson, co-founder of Esteemed Coffee, a nonprofit cafe in Cary that employs people with disabilities. We're hoping to give them meaningful employment so they can get confident and reach their personal, unique potential. They may even be recruited away from Esteemed Coffee to work in other areas. We want this to shine a spotlight on an underserved workforce. And finally, a big number, 14. The number of months restaurants, bars, and hotels and other businesses in the Triangle navigated COVID-related limitations for operations until they were lifted May 14. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Doubling down at home base. Highwood's strategy includes emphasis on Raleigh market. After a challenging year for the office market, Raleigh's Highwood's Properties is looking to double down on fast-growing cities in the southeast. For the first quarter, Highwood's reported $183.8 million in revenue, a $9 million dip from the same period the year before as the company continues to shift its portfolio. Few markets have benefited as much as Raleigh, which surged to become the top revenue-contributing market in the company last quarter, blowing past Atlanta. The company reported a $37 million revenue contribution out of Raleigh in the first quarter, up from $32.5 million for the same time in 2020. And Highwoods continues to make moves to grow its presence in the market. The Raleigh numbers topped Atlanta, which saw a dip to just under $36 million in revenue, down from nearly $38 million in Q1 2020. Our plan is to continue in Raleigh, and we're bullish on the long-term growth prospects, CEO Ted Klink says. All our markets have experienced a number of high-profile relocations, but Raleigh has really been at the top with the Google and Apple announcements. Other Highwoods markets that saw increased revenue last quarter from the year before included Nashville, Tennessee, with $35.2 million up from $34.5 million in 2020, and Charlotte, with $9.1 million last quarter, up from $8.9 million the year before. And Highwoods is spending big bucks to bulk up its portfolio in Raleigh, showing its confidence in the Triangle's ability for a strong rebound from the pandemic. The company in January completed a deal to buy out Germany-based Ballantis Real Estate AG's 75% interest in the Forum in North Raleigh. Last month, the company announced an agreement to acquire a massive office portfolio from Atlanta-based developer Preferred Apartment Communities. The agreement would commit Highwoods to a $769 million investment in acquiring an office portfolio that includes CapTrust Tower at North Hills and the Wells Fargo Tower at 150 Fayetteville Street in downtown Raleigh. The deal includes other office properties in Charlotte and Atlanta and is scheduled to close later this year. On the development side, the company does not have any projects currently under construction in the Triangle, but it does have a number of developable properties with land that can support up to 1.2 million square feet of new space. From a development standpoint, we're going to be really measured in what we do, Klink says. There is no set time limit. Developer snags Knightdale land. A Maryland developer is gearing up to begin work on its latest industrial project in the Triangle after closing on a 35-acre property in Knightdale. Baltimore-based Merit Properties paid $2.5 million for an assemblage in Knightdale for the Merit Midway Business Park, a development calling for up to 5 flex and light industrial buildings totaling 271,450 square feet. As the fastest-growing town in Wake County, Knightdale became a sought-after location for our company, says Keith Wallace of Merit Properties. In addition to population growth, there is high demand for flexible, light industrial space, and we're excited to contribute to Knightdale's economic success. The project is situated on 35 acres along Hidden Oaks Boulevard. In addition to being situated in a highly amenitized area, the park is conveniently located near I-540, Route 64, and I-87, which will serve office and warehouse users seeking access to major transportation routes, Wallace says. Industrial park hits the market. Developer Trinity Capital recently announced it has listed its Eastgate 540 industrial park in Knightdale for sale 4 years ahead of schedule, as the developer plans to finish work on the project this year. Altogether, plans for the project call for a total of 980,000 square feet of space across 6 buildings, including 830,000 square feet developed between May 2019 and August 2021. The final 3 buildings are under construction and are expected to deliver this summer. Eastgate 540 is located at the intersection of Hodge Road and Spectrum Drive near the NC-64 bypass and Interstate 540. Shuttered movie theater to become apartments. A local developer has plans to redevelop the site of a longtime Raleigh movie theater into hundreds of new apartments. Earlier this month, Raleigh-based developer Dominion Realty Partners filed plans for the Atlantic Springs Place Apartments, calling for more than 260 units at the site of a defunct AMC theater. The project is situated on 10 acres at 5501 Atlantic Springs Road, across the street from the Spring Forest Square Shopping Center. Filings with the city call for 264 units across 5 three-story apartment buildings. The movie theater closed last year. Partner Chris Carlino with Dominion Realty Partners says the company is still in the planning stages of the project and has yet to finalize all the details for the development. And finally, we have a big number. $82.65 million. The amount Bridge Investment Group of Salt Lake City paid May 17 for the 600-unit Willow Creek North Ridge Apartments, or $137,750 per unit. The former Lakes Apartments are on 35 acres just down the road from North Ridge Country Club. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Sonia Warrock. UNC Health targets Durham. UNC Health looking to build $252 million hospital in Durham. One of the Triangle's largest health systems is looking to build a new hospital in Research Triangle Park to keep up with the need for services being generated from rampant development in the area. In April, UNC Health submitted a Certificate of Need application to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services to construct a $251.9 million 40-bed hospital with 2 operating rooms in Durham County. Simon George, UNC Health System-Wide Vice President for Real Estate and Development, told the UNC Health Board May 12 that his team executed a non-binding letter of intent with Raleigh-based Highwoods Properties for 34 acres in RTP proper for a price tag of $35 million. We would have the ability for the hospital, a campus, medical office building, with the ability to expand over time, he says. To build the hospital, UNC Health would need DHHS's approval of its application, which is a lengthy process and likely to be contested by the other healthcare systems in the region as competition for expansion is regulated by the state. The state approves and denies applications based on the need for facilities and services, which is reviewed and updated annually in the state medical facilities plan. George says an initial decision on UNC Health's application is expected at the end of September, but the certificate would likely be approved and issued sometime between spring 2022 and late 2024, if all goes well. The construction and facility preparation would take 5 years, so the facility would not be expected to open until sometime between summer 2027 and late 2029. That time frame doesn't stop UNC Health from doing its due diligence, George says, and his team is already in the process of finalizing the purchase-sale agreement for the property. COVID relief provides help for St. Augustine's. Officials say things have been improving at St. Augustine's University in downtown Raleigh since 2018, when the historically black school faced declining enrollment and financial turbulence. Last fall, enrollment rose 23% at St. Augs over fall 2018, increasing to 1,027 in 2019 and 1,076 in 2020. Ed Patrick, Senior Vice President of Business and Administration for the university, says St. Augs' budget for the upcoming school year is based on another 6% increase. The COVID-19 pandemic had mixed results for the university, which took a $3.2 million hit to its auxiliary services revenue, which includes students' rooms and board, but it also received $2.365 million through the Paycheck Protection Program. The university had $20 million wiped off its balance sheet through a loan forgiveness program for historically black colleges and universities that borrowed money through the federal government's HBCU capital financing program. However, more work remains to be done. The hole is so deep that this funding gives us a couple of steps on the ladder, says Dr. Christine McPhail, who took over as the university's president in February. But we still have to climb higher. The playing field is not level yet. Leaders discuss future of medicine. Data and collaboration are the future of healthcare, executives said during a May 11 virtual town hall. Novant Health CEO Carl Armato said data is being used to take lessons learned from the pandemic and turn them into personalized medicine. If practitioners can be aware of what was done for a patient regardless of where, WakeMed Health and Hospitals President and CEO Donald Ginzig said it would only serve to better treat the patient and reduce the cost of healthcare. Innovation will also mean addressing inequities in healthcare and building infrastructure to support the extension of those assets into communities for which they're currently out of reach, Viden Health CEO Michael Waldrum said. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Desby McDaniel, co-founder and head of business development at Clinispan Health, regarding what got him interested in diversifying clinical trials, which is the aim of the Chapel Hill startup. I'd seen my family members taking medications, and we weren't involved in that drug development process, so I saw how those medications adversely affected them. And finally, a big number, $20 million. The amount Massachusetts-based Eleanor Health raised during its recently closed Series B. Eleanor is an addiction treatment provider with its largest footprint, 10 of its 18 outpatient clinics in North Carolina. And now we turn to our continuing series, The Promise Of. The headline, Building on a Family Legacy, how Orrin Ray Haywood Jr. is leading his funeral home's metamorphosis through the COVID-19 disruption. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 acres and a mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. The limousines have been sitting idle, for the most part, outside the Haywood Funeral Home in Raleigh. That's just one measure of how the pandemic has altered the business of funeral services. Despite the U.S. recording over 500,000 more deaths in 2020 than in 2019, 3,358,814 deaths in 2020 compared to 2,854,838 deaths the year prior, the funeral home industry was hit hard by the pandemic. Last year and the first months of 2021 were busier than 2019, perhaps busier than ever before, says Orrin Ray Haywood Jr., president and funeral director of the funeral home his grandfather started in 1914. But revenue is down, probably by 10% or more, and those idle limousines are perfect examples of how ceremonies were changed and services had to be suspended. It has certainly affected our use of the limousines, Haywood says. Before, we'd use anywhere from 2 to 6 limousines for a service, but you can't get social distancing in a car, so people drive themselves now. You don't need everybody sitting side by side, close together in a car. The same can be said for services in the chapel, where COVID restrictions put an end to in-person gatherings in the traditional sense. We never did stop completely, but we cut back a lot, and our ability to have people come in person was greatly reduced due to the national and state restrictions, Haywood notes. Last month, they were still limiting the chapel services to a maximum of 50 people in a space that can hold 200 guests, and before COVID was almost always filled to capacity during services. Overall, the biggest challenge this past year was being able to service a family in the way they remember funerals. We do as much as we can, but it isn't the same, he says. In an industry that prides itself on compassion and personal attention, even more so when it's a family-owned business that has spanned generations, they worked hard to create alternatives that would support families within the confines of COVID restrictions. We've still had limited services for immediate family members, Haywood says, adding that in many cases, the immediate family can easily add up to that 50-person maximum. And we keep the viewing separate from the service. It's become more of a walk-through viewing where people can come pay their respects but not gather. They keep moving, speak to family members, and sign the guest book. Graveside services have become more popular because they can accommodate more guests. We have a loudspeaker system so guests can hear the service at the cemetery, and we've started live streaming some of these graveside services, he says. In 2020, the number of graveside services increased by at least 15%. Another big change was that we held more services in our chapel for churches because the churches were also working under COVID restrictions and many of them weren't doing any services in their facilities. A number of families whose churches weren't available had their pastor come to our chapel and do the service. The funeral home also began creating memorial videos that could be shared on YouTube. Haywood says they would collect pictures from the family and put together a tribute video of the person who had passed. It was a positive way to enable friends and family from across the country to be a part of the service, and for a number of months, they have been live streaming memorial services. Travel restrictions over the past year also impacted the funeral home's ability to return family members who passed away in other states to North Carolina for internment. It was difficult to bring individuals back from places like New York and California, and it had to do with the fact that the airlines had cut back, Haywood says, noting that commercial airlines were traditionally the fastest and most economical way to handle this. In some instances, it took 3 times longer to schedule. Before COVID, I could pick up the phone and work something out with a carrier to have an individual transported within days, but at one point this past year, it was taking a month, which was frustrating for us and hard for families. There are over-the-road services that can be used, but that can be more expensive, although we had to use some of them during the time that the airlines had cut back. Like other essential services, the funeral home also felt the crunch of crippled supply chains and depleted inventories of necessary products like PPE, disposable gowns, and gloves. We don't have all the figures in for the last year of operations, but we know revenues are down and many costs were increased. It may take us 2 or 3 years to get back to where we were before COVID, Haywood says. In many respects, it was a year of not only doing things differently, but also doing more work with fewer resources. And that, coupled with the increased number of deaths, the uncertainties and risks surrounding the virus, and the fact that they had to lay off one employee, all put added stress on the 5 employees at the funeral home. As restrictions are lifted and larger groups are allowed to gather, the funeral home industry will be able to resume services, and Haywood says they have some families who are hoping to plan a larger memorial service by summer. He also hopes to be able to bring back the employee who was laid off, and as services gradually resume, he may also bring back some of the part-time staff who had helped with services in the past. Across the state, funeral homes are looking to hire, with 11 jobs posted on the North Carolina Funeral Directors Association website as of May 13. On April 12, FEMA began accepting applications for financial assistance for funeral expenses related to COVID-19 deaths. As of May 10, the agency had received nearly 174,000 applications, approved more than 2,200 of the applications, and distributed more than $15.5 million in aid. In North Carolina, there were 4,744 registered requests for aid, with 104 applicants awarded FEMA aid and $729,765 in approved funeral assistance. Despite the difficulties of the past year, Haywood is pleased that he changed career path some 25 years ago. "When I was in school, I was thinking about becoming an engineer. I really didn't know much about the family business," he says. "I graduated from North Carolina A&T and from NCSU with degrees in business and art design and went to work in HR. I was very close to my younger cousin who planned to come into the family business, but he passed away very young. And that's when I decided to get my license and come into the funeral home business. As for that artistic talent, drawing and painting were passions, but more as a pastime, something Haywood hopes to rekindle and pursue when he retires." And we also have two news items in the Promise of section. Fayetteville State refreshes for the future. Fayetteville State University is investing in amenities and academic accessibility to benefit its students. The university has announced plans to spend $1.5 million in renovations and repairs of 7 residence halls, as well as construct outdoor basketball courts. This comes on the heels of a previous commitment FSU announced, where it is investing $4.7 million in its summer school program, a plan that will provide free summer classes, room and board, and textbooks for eligible freshmen, sophomores, and juniors who are working to graduate on time. Improvements to the residence halls will take place this summer and include interior painting, new flooring and tiling, upgrades to light fixtures, and new furniture. The work is expected to be completed by the fall semester and is being done in the McLeod, Renaissance, New Residence, Hackley Honors, Hood, Joyner, and Smith dorms. FSU also has plans to add a new health and wellness center, with construction slated to begin in January. Restaurant Revitalization Fund prioritizes minorities. The amount is $2.7 billion in under 10 days. That's what was distributed by the Small Business Administration through the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, which opened May 3 with $28.6 billion in funding. By May 12, the RRF had received more than 147,000 applications requesting a total of $29 billion from the groups it had prioritized. Small businesses that were at least 51% owned by women, veterans, or individuals who are disadvantaged due to racial, ethnic, or cultural bias or inequities in access to capital or credit. "The numbers show we've been particularly successful at reaching the smallest restaurants and underserved communities that have struggled to access relief. These businesses are the pillars of our nation's neighborhoods and communities," says the SBA's Isabella Casillas Guzman. Overall, the program received more than 266,000 applications with requests for more than $65 billion in aid. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal to read the Editor's Notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, Editor-in-Chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Office Buildings into Housing, the Next Frontier. On May 17, Duke Energy announced that it will bring all of its 4,000-plus workers into the new 40-story tower being built in downtown Charlotte. That will essentially result in the utility vacating some 60% of its real estate footprint in Charlotte. Over time, that would mean Duke will walk away from about 1.5 million square feet of commercial office space in the Queen City. Duke is far from alone. An American Institute of Certified Public Accountants survey this year concluded more than 1 in 5 executives expect a reduction in office space in the coming year. The survey polled 693 CFOs, controllers, and other senior-level CPAs and management accountants. Here's a suggestion regarding what to do with the vacating office space. Turn it into housing and keep affordable housing in mind. Turning office spaces into housing is not an easy task. Noted architect Roger K. Lewis, a professor emeritus of architecture at the University of Maryland who has studied the conversion challenges, says it is possible, but it also will be expensive. Just think about the possibilities. Companies that are leaving these office buildings can work with architectural firms and city officials to turn those structures into residential space and offer it back to employees who want to live downtown or midtown. If there's some 15 years left on the lease, the company and the developer can present the conversion plan to the city and county officials for help with the cost and in return make rental rates affordable for the workers. For municipalities, they may have to go to the taxpayers to raise the money through bonds or tax increment financing for such projects. Currently, almost in every high-growth city, affordable housing is an issue. We could take a big step in addressing two impending issues: vacant office buildings and affordable housings, if we think big and think into the future. Now let's talk about logistics. Structure. Tall office buildings have windows on the skin of the building, nowhere else, so the inside part of every floor needs to be reimagined into common spaces or spaces that do not require natural light. If every apartment has top-to-bottom glass on one side, and with the ceilings being higher than a normal house, Lewis and a few other architects have noted that designing these spaces is not only possible, but they can also be attractive. Cost. If we're serious about addressing the needs for affordable housing, our local lawmakers need to wake up and smell the coffee. Converting existing commercial space into, say, workforce housing is far better environmentally than clearing land, cutting trees, and putting up new structures. If we can find taxpayer money for our schools, arts, and the running of a loss-heavy convention center, we can find money to provide housing for the next generation of workers. Developers. Commercial real estate developers don't worry about affordable residential real estate while building an office or mixed-use tower that accommodates office, retail, and apartments. They're working off cash flow and need. It really does not matter whether or not they like conversion, but developers and their financiers, banks, private capital, pension funds, are about to be hit with a harsh reality. Almost every boardroom in the next 2 years will review their office real estate needs. That will be the new normal. Now we turn to some general news articles in the Triangle Business Journal. Raleigh clears path for future development of Centennial Campus, by Caleb Harshberger. The Raleigh City Council has cleared the way for a new chapter at NC State University's Centennial Campus after approving a rezoning request that allows for a major redevelopment. On May 18, the council approved a request from NC State to rezone the campus as the university looks to position the property for its Live, Learn, Work, Play vision. The site covered in the rezoning totals 975 acres of the 1,000-plus acre campus and includes nearly all the land in the campus except for the property east of Centennial Parkway, also known as the Spring Hill District. The request looks to make use of the Campus Master Plan, or CMP, district, which was introduced to the city's Unified Development Ordinance in 2013. Plans would see the property broken up into 9 pods, allowing development of up to 28 stories tall at the highest point. The university filed the rezoning request late last year. At the time, Alicia Knight, Associate Vice Chancellor of University Real Estate and Development, tells Triangle Business Journal, the rezoning would give the property a cohesive zoning plan as the school looks to create a more integrated mixed-use campus where research, learning, and campus culture can collide. It would also update the property's zoning to meet modern standards. As they look to continue the research, innovation, and programmatic opportunities on the campus, we started taking a look at the zoning, Knight says. The timeline for the next steps in the redevelopment are unclear. Centennial Campus came into existence in 1984 with an initial land allocation by Governor James B. Hunt Jr. It expanded in 1985 with property added by Governor James G. Martin. New restaurant coming to Cary. Owner plans to open this year across from future home of Epic Games, by Erica Wells. The owner of a local group of Mediterranean bistros is planning to launch a new restaurant across from the site for Epic Games' new headquarters in Cary. Nawaf Saeed, owner and president of Jasmine and Olives Mediterranean, acquired the building at 740 Southeast Maynard Road on May 5 for $1.6 million, according to Wake County deed records. The approximately 7,000 square foot space is the former location of a Romano's Macaroni Grill near Cary High School. The seller was DB Triple Dipper Restaurant, LLC. The property has an assessed value of $2.17 million, according to county records. The location is in a shopping center across Walnut Street from the former Carytown Center. In January, Cary-based Epic Games announced it had purchased the 87-acre mall for $95 million. The company plans to turn the site into its global headquarters campus, including offices and recreational space. The major project is expected to elevate the real estate scene in Cary to new heights. Saeed opened the first location for his family-operated company in 2005 and now has seven in total throughout Cary, Morrisville, and Raleigh. But the newest restaurant, which he has not yet named, will have a different brand with more options and will include catering and an event space. What we offer at Jasmine Restaurants is fast casual, but the new restaurant will have a much wider selection, he says. We've been looking for a location like this for a couple of years, and we've been working on this deal for the last 6 months. Saeed plans to invest at least $500,000 more on renovations. He says he is trying to navigate the rising costs of labor and raw materials, as well as delays amid the pandemic. The new restaurant is scheduled to open by the end of the year, he says, and will add about 40 to 50 jobs. SaaS sees rising importance of partnerships. Written by Lauren Onosorge. Post-pandemic, analytics are going to be even more important for corporate survival, and that's putting a premium on partnerships at SaaS. That's the take of two of top executives who spoke during the SaaS Global Forum on May 18th from the company's headquarters in Cary. CEO Jim Goodnight returned to the podium to open up the forum, and he had backup from new CTO Brian Harris. Over the last 15 months, we've seen the world change in countless ways, Goodnight said. I'm happy to see how data and analytics are becoming more prevalent in our world. In addition to talking about ways SaaS analytics could help navigate the current crisis, Goodnight and team talked up the Microsoft partnership. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said, "There's a lot to be excited about with the continuing relationship." This pandemic has really changed customer expectations, Nadella said. Every customer is now going to expect a new level of personalized experience, and the same thing is happening with employees inside the company. I think how an organization harnesses data is going to be directly related to firm performance. Hedge fund battles Duke Energy. Elliott Management says Duke is underperforming, should be broken up. Written by John Downey of the Charlotte Business Journal. Duke Energy Corporation says it will consider an activist investor's proposal to spin off its Florida and Midwest utilities franchises in what is now an open battle over the company's future. Elliott Management sent a letter to the Duke board May 17 calling for the addition of new directors and a review of a separation of the company's non-contiguous utilities. Even before Elliott went public, it caused changes at Duke. It is clear now that Duke's January plan to sell at 19.9% of Duke Energy Indiana for $2 billion was a response to Elliott's push for more extreme changes. The May 17 letter from Elliott, Senior Portfolio Manager Jeff Rosenbaum, and Managing Partner Jesse Cohn says Duke is underperforming and sells at a discount to its peers. We believe that a separation of Duke into the Carolinas, Florida, and the Midwest should create $12 billion to $15 billion of line-of-sight near-term value for shareholders, they say. The company disputes that premise. Duke Energy is performing at a high level by executing its clean energy strategy, delivering strong, sustainable value for shareholders, customers, communities, and its employees, and outlining a clear vision for future growth grounded in the largest clean energy transition in the country, Duke says in its response. In a joint statement, Governor Roy Cooper, House Speaker Tim Moore, Representative Robert Reeves, Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger, and Senator Dan Blue praised Duke. Beyond the pride of a home state company, though, is the reality that Duke delivers reliable, cost-effective energy to millions of North Carolinians, the statement says. There are natural concerns that come with putting our state's energy future in the hands of a Wall Street hedge fund, and we would expect the North Carolina Utilities Commission to strictly scrutinize any such arrangement. The Wall Street Journal was the first to report Elliott Management had taken a stake in Duke and was pressing for seats on the board and unspecified changes. It is not clear how much Duke stock Elliott Management owns, but it says it's currently a top 10 investor in the company, which according to publicly available information would mean it must own more than 8.5 million shares or better than 1.1% of outstanding shares. Elliott has even set up a website, Duke Refocused, to promote its proposals to shareholders. Duke has issued a detailed response. Duke contends Elliott proposes a shrink the company strategy at a time when scale is needed for capital investment and growth. Elliott contends the problems at Duke are clear and so are its causes. Duke's broad portfolio of high-quality utility franchises has not translated into appropriate value for shareholders, the letter says. There is a clear explanation for Duke's poor shareholder returns, its multiple discount, and its elevated cost of capital. The company has focused more on increasing its footprint and portfolio than on operational execution and prudent investment. Elliott wants to spin off Duke Energy Florida and its Midwest operations in Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio into two standalone public companies owned by Duke shareholders. The remainder, including Duke Energy Progress, would be the new Duke Energy Corporation. We estimate that the Carolinas, Florida, and the Midwest would command equity market valuations of $54 to $55 billion, $22 to $23 billion, and $14 to $15 billion, respectively, Rosenbaum and Cohn write. The combined value of $90 to $93 billion greatly exceeds Duke's unaffected equity market capitalization of $78 billion. Duke argues setting up independent companies would require significant costs, replicating corporate operations, for instance. These unavoidable new costs would put pressure on utility rates without any tangible benefit to customers and would be highly unlikely to be recoverable from customers, impacting the credit and growth rate of the smaller utilities, Duke says. And finally, the Business Pulse question, do you agree with Governor Roy Cooper's decision to lift capacity limits and most mask mandates in North Carolina? 696 responses, 51% say yes, 32% say should have been done weeks ago, and 17% say no. And we've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.